agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land to Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of August, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon, discuss the cash basis levels with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and wrap up our program with a look at the agricultural weather forecast and a really good explanation as to why the Chinese have been purchasing so many soybeans as of late. That with Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather, out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers settled in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. September corn down a penny and a half at 3.21. December down a penny and a quarter, 3.31 and three quarters. The March a penny and a quarter lower at 3.42. August beans at 10.22 and a quarter, 5 and a quarter higher. November at 9.84, up 1 and three quarters. In January at 9.83 and a half, a penny and a half higher. Bean oil up 21 cents. Bean meal down $2.30. September soft red winter wheat down 5.5 at 4.16 and a quarter, and the July of next year at 4.79 and a half, down a penny for the day. Live cattle futures, August contract, 82 and a half lower at 1.16.25, and feeders were down a buck at $148.72 and a half. Lean hogs finished 75 cents, or rather 7.5 cents higher, at $67.20. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan, thanks for being with us. Earlier in the week, a farmer called and said, hey, I was listening in July, did not make the sale when Dan suggested that cash corn ought to be sold. However, I do recall that some of his longer-term cyclical work was telling me there could be a December move higher in the corn. Can you go back and take a look at that for me, please?
Well, my original thinking was that we would, you know, out of that April low in corn that we had right after the USDA planting intentions report and stocks report, we put in a major low at that 347 area. I thought that was a 40 to 45 week cycle low, and we were beginning basically a period of probably 3 months up, maybe 2 months down or so. So I was originally thinking that that we would be able to maybe keep this thing alive as we go on into late summer, early fall. Obviously, that did not happen. But I would not necessarily totally rule it out either, because when you work with cycles, everything is subjective and timing and whatnot. So there is a way that one could probably read that the market could be making a later 40 to 45 week cycle low. It's maybe stretching out to, you know, into the 50s. That is not necessarily out of the question. I have seen that happen over the years that I have watched the markets. So there is reason to think that we could be maybe making an early harvest low. Now, a lot of that is going to probably depend upon what USDA says tomorrow, how the trade's going to react to it, whether or not they believe it or they disbelieve it or whatnot. I do know that the average trade guess is looking for USDA to bump up the average yield a couple bushels anyway, maybe 2.5 bushels. Of course, we saw the FC stone number as high as 175. I'm not too sure either number that we get here in August is really solid. I think the September number is probably going to be a much better guess of what the actual yield is. But we'll have to see how the trade reacts, I think, to USDA, if USDA would come in kind of what the trade is looking at, only like a 2.5 bushel increase. But when you look at weekly indicators, we are at a point here where this market is deeply oversold, and also could, you know, record some kind of major low in here either this week or early next week. Now, if you look at the longer-term cycles, there's a couple ways that you can probably get to a point where maybe this 16 low here will go down as a major low. There's a couple cycles that I look at. Number one is a five-year cycle, and we kind of had lows at 2005, 2010, and then one was due in 2015. Now, I felt that maybe this 318 low that was recorded in 14 was an early five-year low, but it kind of looks like now, since we're down there within a penny of that, I don't know if we'll take out that low of 318 or not, but you could probably say that we could be making a later, maybe five-year type cycle low. Another cycle that I look at is about a 7.3-year cycle, and that goes all the way back to 1987, and that caught that 86-87 low point. Then it caught the 94 low point. Then it caught the 2000 low point, and now it caught the 2009 low point. And now, if it's in the window here, it could be catching this 2016, 2017 low point. So, from a cyclical point of view, I guess I could argue that we may be in a time window in here to score some major price lows. And of course, fundamentally, one would probably say that the reason we're going to do that is because we may have corn prices below cost of production for a period of time, and that would maybe discourage corn plantings, maybe not here, not only in the United States, but also maybe in South America and around the world. It also means that we could be, maybe next year is going to be the year of major weather problems, whereas this year the so-called well-publicized droughts really never materialized, Todd.
All right. So nonetheless, tomorrow we'll have the crop production report out. It's likely to show a really good crop in the United States, if not even a very, very large bumper crop in the U.S. How much will that depress prices, given what you've told us about the cycles? And I'm not suggesting that a move lower would be in the offing off the USDA report, but that anything in a way of a move higher might not be as much of a move as producers would like.
Yeah, I mean, there's always room for surprises one way or the other when you get in the USDA. But I think the 175 bushel number that FC Stone issued here over a week ago has probably laid the groundwork that the USDA number will look supportive. The Informa Economics Group came out with a fairly modest increase, and if USDA follows here with the trade estimate of only going up maybe 2.5 bushels or so, that would probably be, I would say the report would be kind of considered old news. It doesn't necessarily mean the market's going to rally. It just means that most of that crop has already been priced in, or the size of that crop has been priced in. So what the trade will look for as we go down the road, we're going to have probably a couple private tours yet to go through here during the month of August, whether or not they'll validate or increase or decrease whatever USDA says. But I think you're still going to have to hear actual yield numbers, and they'll start coming into the trade as we probably get into September, and everybody will have a little better idea of whether or not the crop's going to get bigger or if the crop is going to get smaller.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, Argentine farmers are expected to plant 4.61 million hectares worth of wheat this year, that according to the Grain Exchange in Rosario in a Wednesday release, and it's up from the previous year forecast of 4.5 million hectares. By the way, USDA had their acres at 3.77 million hectares last year. The increase in forecast wheat area was sparked by higher than expected sowings in the provinces of Santa Fe, Cordoba, and Entre Rios. The exchange said in the report, wheat and corn planting has increased in Argentina after President Macri ditched the export taxes that the previous government had placed on both grains. Inaugurated in December, free markets proponent Macri lowered trade restrictions, ending years of tensions between Argentine farmers and the state. Back here at home in the United States, some changes may be in the mix for the Farm Bill. It's time to start thinking about that as the Farm Bill expires in the next couple of years. However, Donald Trump's farm advisor, Sid Miller, who's the Texas Commissioner of Agriculture and co-chair of Donald Trump's Ag Advisory Committee, has been thinking about what that Farm Bill could look like under a Trump presidency. He says the Farm Bill was written in a time of high commodity prices, and we need to revamp it. Adding that Miller wants to wait to discuss the details until the campaign puts out a full agriculture platform. Miller says he'll be raising other issues that concern Texas farmers too, including the Waters of the U.S. Rule, the Bureau of Land Management's Range Land Practices, the Endangered Species Act, and the EPA's pesticide registration process. Well, let's give equal time to the other candidate as well. While Donald Trump made his economic speech earlier in the week, Hillary Clinton is scheduled to make hers later this week. Notably, trade is not among the list of things Clinton is expected to discuss, but she will apparently spend a great deal of time blasting Trump and his economic plan, including his pessimistic vision of the United States that can't compete on the global stage. Beyond that, however, it's not clear whether she'll have any fresh details to offer on trade policy or how she would handle the TPP once in office. Her opposition to the deal is now well known, and her campaign has said she will not waver in her opposition, despite the suggestion by her longtime friend Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe late last month that she would, which he later walked back, but Trump criticized her long relationship with the TPP on Monday anyway. Both candidates, of course, are opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. On the subject of the TPP, farm groups have refused to throw in the towel on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this despite the continued spat of negative headlines on the huge trade deal's chances to be considered in a lame duck Congress. The only good news for those who like the TPP is President Obama's announcement last week that he will push for its passage later this year. Then came House Speaker Paul Ryan's comment that he sees no point in bringing up the TPP since it lacks the votes to pass. Asked for a comment, a spokesperson for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association dismissed the naysayers that followed a July comment by NCBA official Kent Bacchus.
Well, I think these comments are essentially a call to arms. I think we in the agriculture industry who have seen the benefits that TPP provides, we need to answer that call. If there's any doubt that's there that we're seeing TPP either in the lame duck or 16, that we should be engaging.
The trade advisor for the American Farm Bureau Federation, Dave Samuelson, agrees. He says agriculture simply cannot agree to throw in the towel on TPP.
Well, I think the leadership needs to know that the votes are there. And so that's what it means, a challenge for those of us who are supporting TPP in the agriculture community and the business community and wherever to keep working hard and get our members to be able to engage with their representatives and senators.
As for Speaker Ryan's rhetorical question, what's the point? Well, Samuelson and Bacchus argue the point is there's no point in waiting for a new Congress and administration, not after the harsh anti-trade campaign rhetoric of both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Now joined by Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Why is it that soybeans continue to rally? They've had some really good days and some really good purchases with China in the market.
Yeah, as you know, I mean, China, I think it's 11 out of 12 days, we've had kind of like a surprise purchase from them. And so, you know, it's been interesting considering they were trying to sell some beans out of their reserves. But it's kind of a head-scratcher for a lot of folks. I think going into the report makes you wonder a little bit what the situation is. I'm not thinking that there's anything gigantic behind it because, in my opinion, if we do get this rain this weekend, you know, we're still looking at an awfully, awfully salty U.S. yield on soybeans this year, but I don't think the USDA will come out with anything extraordinary tomorrow. So, yeah, it's been a good situation for beans. Demand is good, and I think that's a good thing because we're probably going to need it with the supply that's coming.
Because prices have rallied, is it an opportunity, in your opinion, for farmers to make additional sales if they have the time and the need?
I believe so. I think that the thing we all need to be thinking about is, you know, what kind of a yield are we expecting at this point? And so I definitely encourage all of my growers to get out in their fields, do some pod counts, have an agronomist go with them if they will. Obviously, there's some disease issues people are worried about at this point, but the main thing I want to do is get a good handle on yield, because if my APH is 55, but I'm expecting 65 or better, then that definitely changes my break-even price for beans. And I think that there's a fair amount of meat on the bone yet for a soybean market, especially if we get a good widespread general rain this weekend. And right now we're forecasted to get it over, I think, about 80% of the corn belt.
And how about for corn? What are your discussion points there?
You know, with corn, with the bushels that aren't sold just yet, I've told guys, you know, if they need more money in the middle of harvest, they probably ought to consider doing something before the middle of harvest, just simply because I think that we could be looking at some pretty wide basis levels at that point. Basis is really good right now. So I want to put everything in the bin we can put in the bin and play the carry and basis game. And also, you know, realize that a huge crop most likely is going to, you know, provide some pressure initially. So, again, I just don't want to be making sales in the middle of harvest. And the ones that I'm going to be holding on to later, I think there'll be opportunity later on. I don't want to get scared into selling too many bushels at the lowest point of the year.
What is it in the basis that triggers your thought, I need to make a sale here?
Well, you know, we have to keep in mind that we're carrying a fair amount of corn. You know, you talk to a lot of elevator guys that say we've got 30-40% of our storage filled with corn still. Not everyone is in that situation, but there's a lot of elevators holding on to a lot of corn. I talk to producers almost every time, well, pretty much every time I've been out this summer, and they say, you know what, I've got a lot of old corn left. What should I do? And so whenever you're in that situation, obviously you're going to get squeezed out of those bushels at some point because, you know, most producers I've talked to have a pretty good-sized crop coming, so they're going to need the storage. So at some point, you're going to get into a squeeze, and it's going to really be tough on basis.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Great, Todd. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks so much. Let's take a look now at the forecast as it goes forward over the next 5 days or so. Looks like there may be a few chances of rain.
There's essentially two features that are going to converge on the Corn Belt over the next 5 days. Each of these will produce significant rainfall within the Corn Belt. So we think that by this time next week, there will not be too many areas that will have been drier than normal for the month of August. So this is a pretty big change for some of these drier areas, especially across Indiana and Ohio. The first piece of information that you need to know regards a cool front that is currently located far to the west. That produced heavy rainfall overnight in parts of South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and northern Iowa. That is a key corn and soybean region, and most of that region saw 1 to 3 inches of rain, with a few areas having received more than 5 inches to the west of Minneapolis. That front is still approaching, and it's moving fairly slowly, so we expect another large thunderstorm cluster to develop overnight. That one will locate a little bit further to the south, and more than likely aid parts of Nebraska and Iowa later on today and later on tonight. There's a quasi-tropical circulation located near New Orleans right now. That system is going to basically circulate around Louisiana for another day or two, but eventually it will begin to turn to the north and be intercepted by this cool front that's approaching the Corn Belt. All of this is going to converge right around Arkansas, Missouri, and Illinois later on this week and early next week. So by the time you put everything together, we're going to see rain not only from later on today and tonight across the northwest half of the Corn Belt, but then starting tomorrow and continuing into early next week across the southeast half of the Corn Belt and the Delta. We're looking for widespread rainfall of 1 to 3 inches for most corn and soybeans over the next 5 days. And there should be a swath of heavier totals from somewhere in the Delta through the southeast Corn Belt, most likely right along the Ohio River Valley and a little bit to the north. So, Todd, the point here is that two features are moving through the Corn Belt. They're going to converge on the Corn Belt. And between the both of them, we should see some pretty big rains in a lot of different areas over the next 5 days.
From the Midwest, turn your attention to the rest of the northern hemisphere. Any places of concern?
The only other area that we have some concern over regards what's been taking place in northern China. Northern China produces around 45% of its soybean production, and we had a very wet spring and a wet early summer in this area. But since about July 1st, it's been raining very little, and we can look at an index made by Speedwell Weather, and it shows us that it's been the driest since July 1st across northern China since before 1987. So we're talking about one of the driest periods there in more than 30 years. And this is in a key soybean area. So that could be an issue for people out there, but it's always tricky to figure out exactly what's happening in China. But we can just tell you that it has not been raining all that much over the last 5 to 6 weeks.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. And that wraps up the closing market report.